It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, staffers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention were reportedly barred from using certain words in the organization's budget proposals. We'll talk to a Wisconsin public health expert about his reaction and how language can affect the CDC's work. First, Republicans are rushing to pass a tax bill and have it on President Trump's desk before Christmas. If it passes, it would be a big win for the Trump administration after a year in office. Republicans say the bill would slash taxes for businesses and individuals and promote economic growth. Democrats say it'll benefit the rich at the expense of the middle class. Colin Wilhelm is an economic policy reporter for Politico. Colin, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
We have this compromise deal between what the House passed and what the Senate passed. Does it seem likely at this point that this will end up on the president's desk?
This looks like it's on the glide path towards becoming law. Republicans have really rushed this process in a way that a lot of folks thought they wouldn't be able to achieve in terms of timeline. But they've managed to hit their schedule, and they overcame some last-minute drama last week to get everybody that they need on board in order to pass this and send it to President Trump.
What are the main changes here as they put together the Senate and the House plans?
So the Senate plan, this final text follows the Senate plan in terms of treatment of individual tax cuts, basically in the sense that those will expire in 2025 for the most part. That happened because they need to fit those tax cuts within a rigid budgetary rule structure in order to be able to pass this along party lines in the Senate. It's a similar process to how Obamacare was passed in 2010. Basically, if you use this budget parliamentary maneuver that they have chosen to use on this tax package, you can pass this without having to achieve the normal 60-vote threshold to avoid a filibuster.
Looking at a couple of the high-profile things, I want to ask you if certain things are still in or out. One big one people were watching for was the repeal of the mandate under the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. As I understand it, that was in the Senate plan. It is still in this compromise plan, right?
That's correct. That is repealed as of 2019. The individual mandate, which is basically a penalty for folks who don't purchase health insurance, basically to try to enforce the buy-in for Obamacare, or either getting covered for health insurance through your employer or to go out to the exchanges and purchase it.
And looking at some of the big points here, what happens to the corporate tax rate? That wasn't a huge controversy, I don't think, between the House and Senate plans, right?
No, they were largely in agreement on that, although they crept slightly above the red line that the president had laid out for a 20% corporate rate. So the current nominal rate is 35%. They slashed that to 21%, and the administration had tried to keep that at 20%, but ended up giving just a little bit in order to pay for some of the other provisions within this plan.
We are looking at the tax overhaul plan. There's a compromise between the House and Senate aiming to vote on it this week. Colin Wilhelm is with us, economic policy reporter for Politico. Colin, you mentioned that most of the individual tax cuts would expire because of that Senate rule. But what do we see change in individual taxes? I know it's a huge question. It depends on who you are.
Definitely depends on who you are. And disclaimer, I am not a CPA, but most folks listening to this will end up receiving a tax cut. It depends on what you might itemize. So basically the section of your tax return that says, you know, check this box if you did this over the course of the last year, maybe if you have a mortgage, maybe if you paid a lot in property taxes or have large medical expenses. But Republicans, by and large, at the onset of this, they made a lot of noise about simplifying the code and trying to do away with a lot of deductions in order to make this quote-unquote revenue neutral, meaning that it wouldn't add to the overall federal budget deficit. They sort of let that fall by the wayside over the course of this fall and gave themselves about $1.5 trillion to work with over the next 10 years. They basically said, look, this plan, we think it'll gin up the economy and basically pay for parts of itself through that but we're going to give ourselves some room to breathe on this front. They've received a lot of criticism over that from Democrats, that, you know, they're only deficit hawks when it's convenient for them. But in terms of that, let them basically not make some of the hard choices that they would have otherwise had to make on the individual side in particular. And so a lot of those deductions might get reduced. For example, the mortgage interest deduction is reduced from a $1 million cap to a $750,000 cap on new mortgages. But basically, they were kind of able to have dessert without eating a lot of their vegetables.
Now, this all came down to a few senators, or it all does come down to a few senators, as we saw with the Affordable Care Act repeal and replace effort. It takes just, what, three Republican senators not voting for this. I want to look at a couple of the holdouts who are now in, apparently, Senator Bob Corker, one of them. And his big objection, as I understand it, was deficit. This thing's going to increase the deficit. Did anything change when it comes to the deficit and the tax overhaul plan?
No, and that was the real shock, that he switched his vote, given his previous concerns over that. There is really no major change as to how this plan approaches the deficit. In fact, the Joint Committee on Taxation, which is a neutral government-run analysis, basically think tank within the government for tax policy, said this is going to lose about $1.4 trillion over the next 10 years due to the loss in revenue for the federal government. So there's no major difference. It was a little bit of a shock that he switched his vote on Friday. I've seen reports of some speculation about private interests of his. That's not really confirmed. There's also just maybe the basic reality that this had a lot of momentum behind it and was going to pass. When he had said that he was a no, he said he was a no reluctantly and basically wanted an excuse to get back onto supporting this tax bill. So he had this late change of heart, and it may have just come down to basic political momentum for Republicans making this happen.
And then Susan Collins of Maine, her concern was with the mandate cut. She's worried about subsidies for health care. And it sounds like she's negotiated something that, you know, to call a player to be named later, basically something that'll happen outside of the scope of this particular bill, right?
Yeah, that's a really good analogy, actually. Basically, she has cut a deal with Senate Republican leadership saying they will allow a vote and essentially have their members support subsidies to basically shore up the Obamacare's exchanges and try to prevent a premium spike when the individual mandate is repealed, basically over the fear that if fewer people are forced to buy health insurance, then insurance providers will raise the cost of health insurance to accommodate the fact that they're providing it to fewer people, that they basically have fewer customers. So she has organized that with Senate Republican leadership. She also cut a deal within the tax bill, a couple of deals within the tax bill, one notably also around health care. She got basically a drop in the threshold that people can claim the medical expense deduction for a couple of years, and then she preserved it long term, whereas in the House bill, it would have been repealed.
As we wrap up, can you talk about the political fallout? Assuming this does pass this week, Republicans will celebrate, I'm sure, a big achievement, but public opinion polls show that, as a lot of people understand it, this is viewed negatively by many in the public. So what happens after this passes?
Well, this is going to become a major campaign issue. In the midterm elections, Democrats have basically argued that this plan benefits corporations more than individuals because the corporate cuts are and benefits are permanent, whereas the individual ones are not. And as you mentioned, the public polling on this has not been particularly favorable. The Bush tax cuts that were passed, I saw a reference of the Gallup polling around that back when they were passed in the law, and they were more than 50% approval, a majority of Americans favored them, whereas this plan has been in the 20s and 30s, and Republicans are making a huge gamble here that public opinion of this is going to end up changing over the course of the next year because of economic effects, but there's a lot of extraneous factors that go into that too. And it's really going to be, an uphill climb for them to try to sway the public over the benefits of this plan.
Colin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Colin Wilhelm, economic policy reporter for Politico. He joined us to look at the tax bill Republicans are rushing to pass before Christmas.